The following program is pre-recorded.
Random House Audio presents The Third Secret by Steve Berry. Read for you by L.J. Ganser. A breeze drifted across the checkered landscape of the great hollow basin known as Cova da Iria. The land was littered with olive trees and patches of evergreens. The grass grew tall and made excellent hay, and the soil yielded potatoes, cabbage, and corn. And now her eyes were on the lady floating before her. Only Lucia, Jacinta, and Francisco could see the lady. Lucia stared hard at the lady. The form was transparent, in varied hues of yellow, white, and blue. The face was beautiful. But strangely shaded in sorrow. A dress fell to her ankles. A veil covered her head. A rosary resembling pearls, intertwined folded hands. Fatima, Portugal, July 13th, 1917.
There's a new book out about these events like Fatima. It is written by our guest Kevin Cook, a man who graduated from a seminary, a Protestant seminary, but later he converted to Catholicism. Kevin has been infatuated with these events and has written a very interesting book on the subject. Marian apparitions are real. In the book, he takes a look at a series of divine events in which he alleges that Mary and Jesus Christ have been visiting mankind since biblical times. He has some very interesting photos in this book of some of these events, as well as lots of documentation. Kevin is on the line with us from his home in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex. Welcome to the show, Kevin, and why don't you tell our audience right off the bat how you got interested in this, the study of the apparitions.
Yes, Jerry, what happened the fall of 2008, I took a trip to upstate New York. I have a little upstate New York fascination. And, you know, I looked at some property, did the Cooperstown Museum visit, but the day before I left, I was going to be a tourist, and I stopped in a town east of Albany called Auriesville, and I was going to be a tourist that day through the Mohawk Valley, and I ran across Our Lady of Martyrs Shrine up there in Auriesville, and I didn't even know it existed. And, you know, I'm a Catholic, so I went and visited to see what was going on there, and the strangest thing happened. I was there about an hour and a half, and for the first 45 minutes, there was an overpowering, gripping smell of roses and flowers. And understand, Jerry, this is in the middle of a big old field. It's about 100 acres, and it's you know, it's right up in the, about a third of a mile up. It's kind of like a mesa, kind of out west. And there's air blowing, I mean, and there's no services going on that would have, you know, like incense floating through the air or anything of that nature. And at any rate, this was a very powerful thing. And Jerry, I've got bad allergies in Texas, and I guess they're a little better in New York, but still, I'm not a bloodhound. And this was a pungent, overpowering thing.
So, Kevin, had you heard about this before? I mean, this scent thing?
Well, it's L-A-U-S, actually. But I was familiar with Catholicism, but not so much this odor of sanctity issue. Of course, it caused me to research it pretty thoroughly. But and, you know, I do have a master's in theology from a Protestant seminary, and you know, I converted to Catholicism a couple of years before this trip up there. So I had some familiarity, but not with this issue. No, not at all. This hit me from the blind side.
Now, did this incident cause you to write the book?
Well, it caused me to think about writing the book, yes. And I did have some other pleasant and similar related experiences upon my conversion to Catholicism, and I had always been interested, I have to admit, I'd always been interested in Marian apparitions, but this was kind of like somebody grabbed you by the shoulder and shook you that all this stuff is real. And I also knew a fella from the in the Texas area, you may know of him, named Paul Smith. He's a remote viewer.
No, I don't think so.
Paul and I talked, and he had, his mentor was Ingo Swann.
I know him.
Well, now Swann actually wrote a book on Marian apparitions in the 90s, and I didn't think there was a current one that really, you know, I really liked that much, and I thought it was time to have another around stressing this, and I did write it. And also, I want to, like I say, I want to also stress this odor of sanctity issue, because it's actually very widespread among Catholics, not just in saints, but, for example, the lady that's handling my annulment is had an experience with her family where she and her family were praying around a sick loved one, and the whole load of them in the hospital room experienced the odor of sanctity at that time. I mean, quite a moving thing.
Why would this odor of sanctity only impact Catholics?
Well, now, it hasn't only. I knew an Anglican priest that experienced it.
Okay.
Also, of course, you know, I could be xenophobic and say, well, that's the right, Catholicism is the right way to go, and I am somewhat of a Catholic evangelist, but still, you know, I'm not so narrow as to say there are other branches of Christianity don't have merit either. I'm not saying that. But I think there's a level of devotion, truly, that is quite remarkable in the Catholic Church, and I think it just, some things I just can't answer, but it does seem to be pretty prevalent.
Well, now, Kevin, in your book, you cover lots of, let's say, divine events. Let's talk about some of them.
It's just an issue that was pleasant and surrounded and kind of
right.
Boosted me to write the book. Marian apparitions have been going on for 2,000 years. I didn't realize that till I dug into it, the extent of how the duration was and how many of them actually were. The earliest recorded Marian apparition actually occurred in 40 A.D. In Sargasso, Spain.
Can you tell our listeners a little bit about that that incident?
The Virgin appeared to St. James as he was evangelizing trying to evangelize the local Spaniards at the time, and he was kind of downtrodden because he wasn't as big rebuffed, I guess, in his efforts. And she basically, it was a lift to his spirits to see her. And she was living at the time, by the way. And that was the first recorded one. It was called Our Lady at the Pillar. Jerry frequently has experiences, they have a term for it, like, you know, Our Lady of the Pillar, Mediatrix of All Graces. Different titles are usually associated with these apparitions, but that was the earliest. But
as you said, Mary was alive at that time.
She was. She
but
was.
Not there.
Not there, that's correct. That Padre Pio I'd mentioned, that saint that died in 1968, he also did what was called bilocation. Other saints have as well. But
you mean she was two places at the same time?
Correct. And that's actually very, very well documented because, of course, he's lived in relatively recent times. And so, I mean, like I say, once I got into it, Jerry, I find a whole cafeteria of basically paranormal yet pleasantly mystical and divine events connected with it. There's a whole field of study connected with this. Of course, the apparitions are the primary one, but I mean relative to it are the lives of the saints and things that are actually quite proven. But
give us an example of what you're talking about there, Kevin.
Well, like the Padre Pio issue where the bilocation, he had the stigmata in his hands. He could understand people. It's called transverbation, where he actually could understand people. That he was an Italian and spoke only Italian, but he could communicate with people to understand when they were visiting him to take confessions from him, or for him to give confessions to him, rather. And they would speak in foreign languages, and he could understand them. In other words, phenomena that was really quite beyond the norm.
Perhaps it was as simple as mental telepathy.
Perhaps so. He could also recognize spirits in people, where they were afflicted with certain problems. Quite a bit of paranormal ability that was way, way beyond the norm. And like I say, that once you opened up the chest and all this, there was a whole very interesting and very well-documented field of study, in addition to the apparitions.
Besides this smelling incident up in New York State, have you seen apparitions? Have you experienced them?
No, sir, I haven't. I've experienced some very remarkable things, but not the apparitions.
Uh-huh.
I've interviewed people that have been to Medjugorje and what have you, but not. No, I have not actually.
Maybe you can go in a little more detail about that for us. I'm very curious.
Well, normally, throughout history, the Virgin Mary usually appears to young children as a norm. Not always, because, for example, in Zaitun, Egypt, she appeared in recent years, 68 through 70, and again in the last fall, she, we're talking millions of people were witnesses to this event. Millions.
Tell me more about what happened in Egypt, the circumstances.
The Virgin Mary appeared not actually over a Catholic church, but over an Egyptian Coptic church. It's a very old-line Christian denomination in Egypt. And it was St. Mark's Church in, it's a, basically a suburb of Cairo. It's called Zaitun, Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
And Jerry, this was phenomenal. What happened is she started appearing over this church, kind of in a, you could see an outline of her, and you could also see an outline of doves.
So this apparition in Egypt occurred at a certain time?
It usually occurred in the evening.
Okay.
And it was like every evening for like...
Well, I guess that's fairly common, that they show up at a certain time, an appointed time.
It is. Well, nothing usually lasts. Well, I mean, there have been...
Well, I was thinking basically of Fatima.
Well, now, Fatima, there were like, as I recall, there were seven different issues. But where the last one culminating in the Dance of the Sun, and also where there was about 70 to 100,000 witnesses. But the Zaitun experience from 68 to 70 actually far eclipsed that, because in this square right around St. Mark's Church in Cairo, Jerry, they had as many as 250,000 people at one time.
Kevin, to get that kind of crowd, I guess they had a little promotion. I mean, people knew about it.
Oh, yes, it kind of built in, you know, kind of in anticipation, and the word got around, basically. And now understand that the setting at the time was, this was 1968. Nasser was basically the dictator of Egypt. And he was a Muslim, of course. And, well, he was really more of a, well, kind of a lukewarm Muslim. Basically, leaned towards atheism, but still the country was a Muslim
yes.
country. And they were basically antagonistic to visions of the Virgin Mary, even though Muslims actually revere the Virgin Mary. Most people don't know that. But they don't, not to the extent that Catholics would, but they still revere her as being an important personage. But what I'm saying is, anything that would endorse Christianity, of course, the general ruling clique in Egypt would be antagonistic towards. And what I'm saying is, what they did was they sent Egyptian special forces on a house-by-house search a mile square around that St. Mark's Church to try to see if this was some kind of chicanery or projection of some hologram.
Hologram or something.
Right. Of course, this was 68 and it was Cairo. There weren't any holograms. There probably aren't any now. But still, they made every effort to try to debunk it, and they couldn't do it. And as a matter of fact, Jerry, after extensive efforts to investigate it, even Nasser, who was the president of Egypt, and like I say, basically antagonistic to this sort of thing, that endorsed the authenticity of this apparition, which is really quite striking.
This is the Virgin Mary that would appear.
Yes.
How do we know that?
Well, by outline, the assumption is, in this case, it was a silent apparition. In this case, the outline was one that would be normally associated with the Virgin Mary by appearance. That's why.
So she was dressed in a robe,
right,
or something?
That's right. Now, normally, see, now, Jerry, not all these, that was a silent apparition in this case, but most of them, or at least the bulk of them, what I've been able to understand, are talking apparitions, where the seer, who's basically the witness, they call them seers, will actually communicate with the Virgin Mary.
There was no communication from the one in
Egypt.
No,
this was a silent one, but like I say, it went on for like 2 years. No, but there's a pivotal
these apparitions. How do you explain it as a devoted Catholic, Kevin? I mean, what does it mean? Why would they appear? What is the message?
Well, I think the reason is Mary is acting as a messenger for God, basically. Just like there's been angels that have appeared in past years. By the way, Jesus also shows up in a lot of these apparitions too.
Really?
Yes, it's not just isolated Mary. I'd say in about a third of them, a quarter to a third of them, he shows up.
So has Jesus showed up recently?
Yes, in Cabejo, Our Lady of Cabejo, which occurred in Rwanda, he did show up in the 90s.
Did Jesus talk?
Yes, he did. He appeared to a young child there, and basically the gist of the information was he was trying to ask the people to not be promiscuous because there's such an AIDS epidemic. Of course, he didn't indicate that in his message, but the effort to avoid promiscuity is very important at that time because, well, Africa's just overrun with AIDS, among other, of course, moral reasons. There's also some very physical reasons they need to be...
Now, you're saying there was an AIDS epidemic going on?
And still is. But that was the message at that time. But that was also a very well-authenticated message as far as witnesses and aerial phenomena, like in Fatima. They had a dance of the sun circumstance like that occurred in Fatima. And, see, Jerry, one thing that's strikingly important that adds a lot of credibility to this is not just are the witnesses credible witnesses, but, and by the way, there's physical evidence, which I'll tell you about later, but there's a pivotal timing. You ask why she would do this, and I indicated she was a messenger of God, but Jerry, on almost every one of these, except for the ones that are private revelation to individuals alone, the public apparitions are just, they're come at pivotal times in history.
Like, what do you mean?
Well, like, there was the apparition at La Salette in France. There's been so many different apparitions in France. Was frequently to assure the population that, for example, she assured the population, the La Salette apparition, that the Germans wouldn't invade and destroy their country. She appeared and told them, you know, they were praying to the Virgin Mary in that little La Salette area to, you know, preserve France and their, you know, children that were in the army from the Germans. And that was a special effort that the bishop of the local Catholic group were making at that time. And she appeared to them, I guess, and answered their prayers and said that that's okay, don't worry about it, there's going to be an end to this conflict. This is in the 1870s. And there's going to be an end to this conflict. And Laval, the town nearby that they were referring to, would not be invaded. And the Germans, without real explanation, except they knew there was a Marian apparition, turned tail and called it quits on the invasion. That's just one example.
Have there been some recent events? I mean, like in the last decade or something?
Oh, yes. Yes, there is. Well, there's one going on right now. Well, there's two different areas going on right now. Medjugorje has been an ongoing apparitional site for 30 years.
Now, how often does it happen there?
As I understand, it's about a weekly occurrence at this point. However, now that understand, I'm not ready to completely get behind the Medjugorje experience. I'm not negating it either. And some, like Cardinal Schoenbrunn, a very important cardinal, has actually basically endorsed the authenticity of Medjugorje. And some other important cardinals as well. The Vatican has a commission they've established under Cardinal Ruini that's going to, you know, finally come to grips with, you know, the validity of Medjugorje, pro or con, and that's in progress now. There's been some, in that book of mine, I have a photograph, it's quite an excellent photograph. It was given to me by a member of my church here in Keller, Texas, and this lady had made a pilgrimage to Medjugorje, and her companion had taken a photo of the hill where these apparitional episodes occurred. And Jerry, superimposed in that photo is an outline of the Virgin Mary. I kid you not.
And that picture's in your book. Kevin, it'd be a good time to plug the book again. Tell the audience the name of it and how to get it.
Okay, the book is Marian Apparitions Are Real. Marian Apparitions Are Real. That's the title, and it's available at my website, which is www.marianapparitionsareal.com or at amazon.com.
Let's get back to that weekly apparition. When does it happen? Every Sunday?
It's, as I understand, it's a weekly event.
Uh-huh.
Now, there's another one that's going on in Brazil, and this is it's all over the news in that area. A fellow named Pedro Regis has been Christians having apparitions of the Virgin Mary, and Jerry, he's come up with absolutely startling prophecies and predictions in recent times. And what he does is he'll post the messages from the Virgin Mary on his website, you know, keeps it kind of current as what the latest messages are. And Jerry, there's been prophecies of the Gulf oil disaster, of the Haitian earthquake, in very clear terms. Now, these are some momentous prophecies. He prophesied the...
Kevin, why do you think these things happen at certain locations? I mean, and not at others? Like, why not the...
Show up the White House or something.
Yeah, the White House. Or maybe a reality TV
show. You're saying, and why pick frequently children?
Well, I'm asking not necessarily to debunk. I'm just curious. Is there an answer?
I know. And, Jerry, I wish I could provide a better one. The only one I've really come up with is that frequently she would use children because children are basically guileless. And some of the things she's relayed to children as far as prophecy and things of that nature have been absolutely dead bang. And, like, for example, in the Fatima example that most people know of, the three young children, they didn't know anything. And when they relayed messages from her that, you know, Russia would have errors and, Second World War and things, I mean, there was no way these children were just, you know, rural country kids. They had no education to know about, hardly knew where Russia would be, let alone, the dangers of communism or errors. And things of that nature. So what I'm saying is that maybe I think she picked children because they're innocent and they accepted things for what they are, whereas, oh, perhaps some old grizzled fella might just say, oh, I don't know what kind of game you're playing, but I mean,
I understand. You know, in today's world, everybody has a cell phone, and many of them can take pictures. Anybody ever take a cell phone picture?
I don't know about the cell cameras, but I know there's been lots of pictures like the one that's in the front of the book.
Yeah.
And like I say, the TVs took pictures of the Virgin Mary over the Zaytun Church. And that was on Arab television. Now, like I say, 2-3 million people saw it. So in other words, this evidence is fairly widespread. Really.
Does this happen only in countries that are predominantly Catholic?
Well, yes and no. Like Rwanda would not necessarily fit in the category of being predominantly Catholic. France, definitely, at the time when it occurred, definitely, and Brazil, of course.
Yeah, I mean, South America is predominantly Catholic.
And let's see, of course, there's been some in Italy. That certainly fits the bill.
And, of course, Egypt isn't.
It's not. No, the Coptic population is probably 14 or 15%. But I think a lot of it is, the pivotal timing. Like, France used to be quite the little country, you know, running the world affairs. I mean, it was very pivotal in the First and Second World War. And, there were messages predicting the coming World War in the 30s. There were a couple apparitions that were approved by the Vatican itself in Banau and Borang, Belgium, that predicted the coming World War II. And this was done in the early 30s. And you got to remember, Hitler was made Time Magazine Man of the Year in 35, so people didn't look at him as a villain until later. And so, in other words, what I'm saying, these were given to basically, in this case, not children, but just basically loner kind of people that were pure at heart, simple, nice
Besides
people.
Besides that thing you ran across up in New York State, any apparitions here in America?
There's been some, but Jerry, they're under investigation. In the back of the book, give you an idea of the number of these things. In the back of the book, I have an appendix from the International Marian Research Institute. It just goes from 1900 to approximately the year 2000, a little over 100 years. And it details a couple hundred different apparitions and their status as far as being approved or not approved. And I could tell you about that in a minute. But what I'm saying is there's been hundreds and hundreds of these. Now, the one at Bayside, New York, has not been found to be credible. There's been actually, Jerry, some ones upon investigation that were demonically backgrounded. Or from demonic sources, I should say.
And how do you know the difference? I mean, the demonic from the angelic?
The church has investigated them, and there's several different tests. For example, this is very important to the whole field of the study, is usually what will happen is, of course, the kids will, or the seers, adult or children, whichever is the case, will approach a priest, and that priest will approach the bishop with these matters, and the bishop will usually appoint an ecclesiastical commission to investigate it, you know, doctors, psychiatrists, and any other kind of investigator who would, you know, be able to shed light on the credibility of the witnesses, whether they're, you know, mentally stable, you know, habitual liars, and any physical evidence, all these, and observers, just everything that would go in like a court case. And that's the way they start out. And of all these apparitions, Jerry, of all of them, there's only been 11 that the Catholic Church itself has actually approved. I mean, in total, that is.
So, Kevin, does the commission have the final word, or does it go on up to the Vatican, all the way to the Pope? I mean, how does this work?
Well, they've changed the... For the most part, they've stopped having Vatican approval for the apparition itself. It's more of a... Jerry, it's kind of a more of a loosey-goosey arrangement. I mean, to be trivialize it, but for example, in Borang and Banal in the 30s, the Vatican itself actually approved both those. The way it has normally been handled since then is the bishop, the local bishop, will approve it or disapprove it. Like in the Philippines, Our Lady of Lipa that occurred, what had happened in the 90s, like 1990 was the last episode that I know of apparitional events there, but the local bishop made a determination that there was validity to it. In Batania, in Batania, which occurred in Venezuela in the 80s, the local bishop made it a determination that there was validity. And like I said, that's been the mode. However, there's kind of a de facto approval. For example, Pope John Paul II visited Knock, Ireland, and that was kind of an indirect manner of approval. Without, you know, officially slapping a gavel on it, he would say, you know, but his visit basically gave credibility to the event.
We have another half hour coming up with Kevin Cook on this fascinating subject. I'm Jerry Pippin. You know, when we pause for a commercial, it's always for somebody who pays the freight, pays the way. Well, I'm going to take time out to talk about somebody who can't pay their way. And that's the stray animals, dogs and cats and other animals, who need your help. And there is a way to help them. Support no-kill animal shelters. It's a gift of life that keeps on giving. These animal shelters are located around the world and maybe in your neighborhood. Animals, they need love. They don't need to be sent someplace and then executed just because they don't have a home. Support the animal shelter that is a no-kill shelter near you. Give them a donation of $10, $25, $50 or more. The money will be well used. The animals will love you for it. So give a gift of love. A gift of life to that stray dog or cat.
You had a tremendous circumstance because not just one or two or six or seven people seeing the Virgin Mary, but hundreds of thousands, including former President Abdel Nasser, government officials, officials of the Church, the Orthodox Church, as well as Catholics, Protestants, Pentecostalists. You had them gathering every night for several years.
She stood there for a while, and then she began to walk on the roof, till she reached the cross and she knelt in front of the cross. She looked towards the area where I was and she smiled. That view was the most majestic and beautiful and heavenly view I have ever laid my eyes on.
Why she show herself for me? Why Saint Mary show herself for someone like me?
A sheet of light just out of nowhere appeared on the top of the church. And my sister-in-law says, look, she's standing there. She came down, she stood on the ground beside the church. And then she moved into the church, and then she vanished.
That's a little bit of the soundtrack of the English documentary, The Appearance of the Virgin Mary in Egypt. We talked about that incident with Kevin Cook, our guest, in the first half hour. It actually occurred over a couple of years or so, from 1968 to 1970. Kevin, welcome back to the show for the second half hour. Let's talk a little bit about your book, Marian Apparitions Are Real. Kevin, is the book just about the apparitions, or do you cover other subjects?
Well, I try to weave in basically the cultural background at the time of the circumstances, the pivotal timing of why she's there and how she's there. And I also stressed the physical evidence of it. Those are the
When you wrote this book, were you going to convince us that these things happen? Or were you a debunker?
No,
Or were you more like I am, agnostic?
I was open-minded because I knew that, well, what I did know was that I'd obviously gotten involved with something with some validity to it. And I'd always had the interest in it. I just took it open-mindedly, like we do on one of the shows. See, what had happened, Jerry, I guess I didn't tell you this originally, but I am a avid listener to, say, your show, Coast to Coast shows.
Mm-hmm.
And, I've always been interested in, I guess I grew up in the Bermuda Triangle, and my father was a big electronics engineer, but he did a lot of work with the Coast Guard on a volunteer basis, where he would hire Coast Guard power squadron instructors and what have you. And when I was a teenager, late 60s, early 70s, I asked him, you know, is there anything to this Bermuda Triangle? Because I'd read the Charles Berlitz. And he said, actually, you expect me to debunk it, because I'm a big, you know, engineer type, and your dad. But he said, actually, it's as true as all get out. Because, see, he hired admirals to, because he had a big, giant electronics company. They sold stuff to the Defense Department. So he hired as liaison, you know how they do, they'll hire retired admirals to help you make contacts and so forth. But he also, and of course the volunteer work, so between all those things, he had a lot of avenues to high-level military people. And the basic gist of what they told him was 10% of the events there was no way it had normal explanation. No way, no how. I used to smoke, and even if you don't, just logic tells you it takes about 10 minutes for a cigarette to burn down in an ashtray. And a Coast Guard boat would come up to, a boat where the occupants, say, are missing, yet cigarettes burning in the ashtray, so you know they couldn't have been gone too long. No evidence of a struggle. The boat's got sonar and radar. It could tell what's on the water, over it in planes, under the water. There's nowhere for these people to have gotten away that the Coast Guard wouldn't know where they were. And this happened over and over and over. And also, I got one that's even tops that. Dad, you remember Oh, the Ghost of Flight 401.
Yeah, sure. I remember the TV movie of Ernest Borgnine, even. The captain would show up, the dead captain would show up in the back of the cabin of the airplane.
Yeah, the navigator, right. Ernest Borgnine was in that movie. Well, what it was we lived just down the road in Plantation, Florida, from a lot of Eastern Airlines pilots. And I asked Dad about that. He says, well, here again, you expect me to debunk it? I can't, because he'd actually seen the movie himself without me knowing it and had talked to these people at little barbecues, little neighbor get-togethers. Because Dad was a million miler at Eastern Airlines, so he that's all we ever did, fly up and down the East Coast on Eastern. And it was true, Jerry. I mean, you're talking retired Air Force veterans that became pilots for Eastern. I mean, guys have seen combat.
So, Kevin, what do you make of all this? I mean, besides the apparitions, the ghosts, and all the other paranormal activities, I mean, you're a confirmed Catholic now.
Okay, even Jesus spoke of ghosts in the Bible, for example. He did. And, you know, of course, the Witch of Endor raised the ghost of Solomon and all this. So, I mean, there are ghosts. Now, they're what they are, I don't have the answer for. Jesus actually went to minister to the, according to the Bible, he went to minister to basically recalcitrant demons in Tartarus, which is another dimension, you know, after his death on the cross. And he came back, and it says he went to some other form of dimension. What I'm trying to say, we got a more complex world than we think we do. The Bible also says, he says, I go to prepare a place for you. In my Father's house are many mansions, and I go to prepare a place for you. When many mansions to me implies complexity. Okay? And also further, Jerry, in Genesis chapter 6, it speaks of the watchers who had sex with earth women.
Yeah, in that chapter in the Bible, especially Genesis 6:6, but the entire chapter, seems to me like they're talking about extraterrestrial beings coming to Earth.
Well, I mean, this to me, I believe these people are an alien species. I don't think it was spirit.
Well, I'm with you.
And, but see, also, just logic. Take religion out of it for just a second. Yes, I'm a Catholic. I mean, I'm in there every Sunday, and I'm as Catholic as anybody. But what I'm saying is, forgetting religious affiliation for a moment, you've got all these stars, like Carl Sagan used to say, billions and billions of stars. There has to be more out there than just us. I mean, that's a big waste.
Yeah, it's logical.
So, and also, who are we to contain God that you can only do this or that or the other? I mean, in the book, I also mentioned in my introduction that I stress string theory and how the basic thrust of it is these days that I'm sure you've probably had shows to deal with this where, you know, there's either 11 or 25 different dimensions. There's no telling how many, at least that many, that they've pretty well proven. So there's just a lot more out there than we realize. So, I mean, I'm not going to be able to put God in a box.
Kevin, I know you're a devout Catholic, but the Vatican and the Catholic Church has been making overtures about ETs perhaps existing. And UFOs?
They have. There's a UFO investigator I've heard before. Her name is Paula Harris.
Yeah, I know Paula very well. We've done a lot of things together.
She seemed like a nice gal. And she used to interview Monsignor Corrado Balducci, who seemed to be kind of
He and I were in the same movie, not at the same time, Fast Walkers.
See, that's the way the Vatican does, in kind of a diplomatic way. Of course, you know, they've been doing diplomacy for 2 million years. They know how to handle things. And basically,
I don't have the information in front of me, so I can't give the name, but I believe it was a bishop or at least somebody in the Catholic Church that said something to the effect, Kevin, well, I mean, if there's ETs, we need to save their souls or something to that
effect.
They want
to baptize them. I know. I forget who exactly said that. Yeah. And the Vatican Observatory is very, very interested in...
in Arizona.
Yes, they twisted a lot of arms to get that observatory built in Tucson, and which was kind of strange because you got to understand they've got a nice observatory in Rome too. I mean, they didn't absolutely need it in Tucson, so it must have great meaning to them. And obviously, they
no
basically,
doubt in my mind that something paranormal or UFO wise or both is going on.
Yeah.
Between Phoenix and Tucson. I mean, a lot of activity. And I don't really know what
it
is.
They do what they do with good reason. And I think, really, even though Balducci, Monsignor Balducci, who I think is since deceased.
Yes, he is.
But still, his job was kind of a de facto representative of the Vatican at these groups and meetings, conferences. And he wasn't formally given that title, but yes, he was. And that's why I was relating to the approval of the apparitions. Frankly, came that way a lot too, because Pope John Paul II doesn't say absolutely the apparitional event at Knock was formally approved, but he'll go ahead and visit it, which is to say the same.
Well, I don't think in your book you're pushing the ET factor, and when you write about these apparitions, it seems to me it's another message, and that's a message of hope.
It is a message of hope. Sometimes a message of a warning, too, like a mother would do, like you better, straighten up or such and such events are going to happen. And this, it's occurred quite frequently. But the bulk of it is, yes, a message of hope.
Uh-huh.
The whole gist of the book and the whole gist of, I think, the whole event system is God does care. He's not the watchmaker God that winds up the watch and then just leaves it running. He's not. And
so you believe in divine intervention then?
Absolutely. If I told you a funny story that happened in the writing of this book, you'd probably think I'm nuts.
Well, by all means, Kevin, tell it to me.
I will. See, what had happened is, this is back January of this year. I was, in writing a book, it's a laborious, torturous
process.
This
is a love-hate thing, I take it.
It's like mining coal. And anyhow...
Go ahead with the story.
I had, gotten a little bit of slow progress. I was about, 80% done. And I got a little nudge mentally, like, Kevin, you need to get this done, quit procrastinating and get this over with. You put too much work down to finish it. So I did, and around the first of the year in the tree business, it's usually we take a couple weeks off the first week of January to first part of January because it's too wet or cold. And I was at Barnes & Noble, and I'd was finished writing a chapter on Our Lady of Guadalupe, which is, by the way, I need to mention something about that, but... But anyhow, I wrote the chapter, and I got up to stretch my legs, and, they had a sale table, and I picked up Mad Magazine bathroom reader, a little silly cartoon book and what I used to read when I was a kid. I didn't go through it page by page. I just flipped it right open. But I flipped it right open to a joke about Our Lady of Lourdes.
Really?
Yeah, and this is a 500-page book. And I'm thinking, good Lord, what are the chances?
Well, I mean, it's one out of 500.
But not just that, but what are the chances I'd even
look
at?
Right.
That was kind of a waker-upper. And then, I went to leave the store and go to the car, I turned on the radio, and there's a show on Catholic radio about Our Lady of Guadalupe, which is the chapter I just wrote. Now, the chances combined in that are much, much higher than winning the Texas lottery.
Now, this Lady of Guadalupe, that's down in Mexico, right?
Yes, Our Lady of Guadalupe. And I really want to stress this because this deals with physical evidence that's quite striking. This occurred in 1531. An Indian named Juan Diego had a meeting with the Virgin Mary, and right outside the setting for Mexico City, she asked him to go to the local bishop and for a chapel to be built in her honor there. And basically, the Indian tried to accommodate her wishes, and they patted him on the head and sent him along because they figured, yeah, I know you saw the Virgin Mary, right?
Yeah.
So he came back saying he needed some proof. And the essence, to make a long story short, he was wearing a garment which is called a tilma, T-I-L-M-A. It's a garment made out of cactus husks, very fragile, coarse husks. Okay. Well... She gives him flowers. This was December, and Mexico City's high elevation, fairly cold in December. She gives him a bunch of roses, Castilian roses, puts it in his tulma and says, take this back to the bishop. So he does this, and he opens it in front of the bishop, and the bishop is awestruck because these are Castilian roses. Of course, he's from native Castile, of Castile in Spain, and this was, he knew what they were. And secondly, and more importantly, there was the image of Our Lady of Guadalupe on this cactus husk garment when Diego opened it up. And this is on display right here and now, Jerry.
Uh-huh.
Lady of in the Basilica of Guadalupe in Mexico City right now. It's been in church custody for just a little shy of 5 years.
Now, there have been many examples of images on cloth,
yeah,
like the Shroud of Turin. How do you explain that? Is it a miracle?
Sure. This one is, because let me finish just in real brief about this. This has been examined by Sandia Labs. No element of pig from engineers from Sandia Labs, not as Sandia as a group, but engineers from Sandia Labs. There's no evidence of pigment. There's no evidence of tracing. And this is basically a miraculous thing. This thing should have deteriorated 450 years ago. If you and I took a bunch of cactus husks and threw it in the closet, in 50 years the thing would be dust. And this thing was exposed to heat issues, moisture issues, smoke issues, for all kinds of things, for at least the first 350 years. All I'm saying is, and not only that, but here's the coup de grace. In her eyes, her eyes on this garment, in the Virgin Mary's eyes, it demonstrates the Samson-Purkinje effect, which it's a distortion effect, but if you and I were looking at each other, the opposite reflection would be distorted owing to the curvature of our lens in our eye. This is replicated in the eyes on the drawing or the image, and there's no way in 1531 they could do that. I don't think they could do it now. In other words, 20 different ophthalmologists have examined it, and all of them confirm this is the same image you would have if it was a human eye. In other words, detail is too fine to be replicated. Anyway, I don't need to stress that too much, but I mean, this is a tremendously miraculous artifact.
And it's still on display down there.
Exactly. It gets millions of visitors every year. And it's under glass now, but like I say, for the first 350 years, it was just hanging in the breeze. And it has not deteriorated. But the key factor is there's no pigment, no tracing. We couldn't, modern science, with all things we could do, we could not replicate it now.
We're talking with Kevin Cook, and the name of the book is Marian Apparitions Are Real. Kevin, I bet you feel like you're predestined to write this book.
Without a doubt. That doesn't make me a wonderful person, but I mean, I'm just an old salesman and ex-army type. I'm not a real sweet guy. Even though I was a minister, I was basically, to be candid with you, Jerry, I was a little hard-bitten to be a Methodist minister in my youth. I was I'm just an old sales guy. But not a bad person, but just, you know, not necessarily a mild-mannered person. But she told the children at Fatima that she'll use sometimes not the best people, and I think I fit that category. But I know this. You know, perhaps there's nothing more fervent than a convert, and I guess I fit that category.
Kevin, don't be too hard on yourself. I think you're pretty decent. I think you're a real, real fine fellow. Trust me.
I'm not the picture of a priest that would, you know, be a mild-mannered kind of fellow. I'm just an old buzzardy Florida salesman.
Yeah.
But still, I think I got smacked in the face like it was a tuna with this. I mean, you'd have to... And like I say, the thing I'm really trying to emphasize the most of it all, yes, the apparitions are true. They're absolutely true. They're from God. They're not from... Like, you know, I had one moderator of a show was trying to hit me over the head where these were the products of UFO aliens that were trying to replicate these images. And I'm thinking... Well, you know, I kept saying, no, I don't buy that. I mean, first you'd have to ask. Yes,
you know, who cares, Kevin, how God did it? If he did it, he did it. You know what I mean? I mean, I've been doing UFO shows forever, as you know.
I've met each other at UFO conferences.
Right. We did meet at a UFO conference. I mean, I think you can be a Christian and believe in UFOs.
But I like that. But the thing is... Yes, God can use the aliens in his own purposes. He made the aliens, too. But the thing is, here's the thing about it. The whole notion of the mentioning of it on the show I'm referring to was to try to basically denigrate the event as being of lesser importance and not divine origin. That's basically what the gist of it was. But I got to thinking, and I basically, I don't know, maybe I got crosswise with the moderator of the show, but I said, look, it's not alien-based. What's in it for the aliens to convert people to Catholicism or bring them to God? I mean, how is that going to help the alien agenda, you know? I mean, we've got prophecies, we've got miraculous healings, which I haven't even touched on, and physical evidence, and all to do what? To drive people towards Catholicism? I mean, that just doesn't seem like an alien would come that far to come do that, you know?
Well, Kevin, you seem pretty open to all possibilities, and I think it shows in this book.
Well, there's the reason I... The one thing I could say is there's a fellow who's on some other talk shows. You might have had him, Lionel Fanthorpe.
No, I haven't.
Well, he is he's an Anglican priest, prolific author. He's written at least 100 books. No, actually, more like probably 200 books. He's a retired Anglican priest, and he was head of the British UFO organization as well. And he'd be like a good guest. You ought to round him up. But he's written books on sea mysteries and this and that. He just has an inquiring mind. And I know there's areas I won't go into. I mean, I'm not going to have seances, and I'm not going to deal in occultism from the standpoint of witchcraft or something of that nature. I wouldn't even think about it. But what I will say is that I think God gave you a mind to have an inquiring mind, and I think he's already clued us into the fact that there are aliens. Even the Vatican is giving a nodding assent to it in an oblique manner. So, I mean, I don't think God expects me to run from that issue.
Well, Kevin, some people do run from that issue.
No, I mean, you know, that's why I like... I know there's something to the UFO phenomenon. There has to be. I mean, where there's... Jerry, I look at it in that context, where there's smoke, there's fire. I mean, I know Linda Moulton Howe real well. I advertise sometimes with her, and I just run across her, and I've seen her a lot at Eureka Springs. And she and I talk sometimes, and she assures me, just from a reporter's view, for all the years she's looked into this stuff, there are aliens as sure as God made little green apples.
I know Linda, and I know you, and I agree with both of you.
Yeah, she's an excellent lady, and she's just telling me this on the side just as a friend. They just exist. And I fairly concur for the same reasons we just talked about. I mean, there's too many pilots, too many people that are credible policemen and everything else that have been good witnesses that you could... You know, you can bet their word has value.
Kevin, how about yourself personally? Have you had any supernatural experiences? If you have, give me an example.
Well, okay. I joined Catholicism about 5 years ago. And what happened is, the first year you have to go through a year of training to be confirmed and so forth. And I went to Mass for the first time, and while I was at that church, and you can't take it until the year's up, but I attended it. And being from the East Coast, Catholic churches all look Gothic, you know, old, and the one I go to so modern, it looks like a movie theater lobby, and I didn't know where the holy water founts were. I knew the Catholics would cross themselves with holy water on entering and so forth. So I sat down waiting for the service to start, and I saw the veteran Catholics come in, and I saw what passed for the holy water founts there, and I went on in. And I came out, and I was trying to beat the 2,000 people in the church out to the parking lot, because my church has 26,000 members. And I crossed myself with the holy water, and I didn't do it with any great anticipation. It was just a mechanistic thing that I knew Catholics did. And to make a long story short, what happened is I had a tremendous chill all through my torso, and I knew this was unusual too. And I said, okay. And it happened the first two times I went to the service like that, and I knew this was an unusual experience too. And of all the dozens and dozens and dozens of times I've crossed myself with holy water since, it's never happened since. It was kind of like a slap-you-awake thing. And that, so I've had little small yet pleasant things like that in the odor of sanctity that are the most moving things I can...
Kevin, our time is about to get away from us. Before we leave, what would you like to say? I mean, besides go buy my book. You have a website. We haven't plugged that.
Is that Marian apparitions are real. At www.marianapparitionsarereal.com.
And we have a link to it.
Okay. And it's also at Amazon and barnesandnoble.com. But, Jerry, all I'm trying to say, the essence and the crux of this whole matter is God does care. This is a real phenomenon. It's not superstition. It's not just something to promote. Matter of fact, the one thing I could say the Virgin Mary has said in many different apparitional attempts is she isn't even just coming just for Catholics. She's for everybody. I mean, this is a non-denominational effort on her part. You expect me to just say it's just for Catholics, but it's not. And she said it, so if she said it, I'll give it credence. And God does care. He doesn't, I mean, he may want you to follow a certain set of regulations, but he does care. And this is an effort to reach out to humanity via her that you'd feel comfortable with, more comfortable perhaps than somebody showing up with a chariot or something like that. And I guess a maternal figure being a more comforting and acceptable figure to you than an angel that might scare you to death, perhaps. And I guess I'm just saying the reality of it, it's really, this is the real stuff, and it's what people need to know.
Kevin, interesting discussion, interesting subject. Thanks for being on, and we'll invite you back sometime.
Okay, that sounds good. You bet. Thank you, sir.
I'm Jerry Pippin. Thank you for listening. Cheers.